Hello, everyone. This is Mike Quincy connecting the light. My guest today is Cheryl Hirsch Kramer. We're going to discuss her work, which is in her book, Soul Purpose ID, Aligning with Your Destiny. And she is also the author of Nine Roses for Chelsea, which is a spiritual journey. And Chelsea is, in fact, her soulmate dog. So welcome to the program, Cheryl.
It's a pleasure to be here, Mike. Thank you so much for having me.
Right. What actually started you out on this particular path?
Well, like many of us, I found myself on this path without consciously thinking I was ever going to be here. I did not live a spiritual life until age 45. And at age 45, I went through a near-death experience. I was raped and held captive. And that's going to change a life for many people, and it certainly changed mine. My health went away. My work went away. My friends went away. My money went away. And it was all appropriate because that's when I connected with spirit, and I found that I had a better life than I ever had before, if that makes any sense.
Yes, indeed, yes. And I noticed that you also mentioned that the idea came from a rather sad year. I don't know whether you meant 2011, presumably, when you lost four very close people to you who were loved ones. And you also learned of problems that you had during your childhood.
Yeah, it's been a really interesting year. I find that these years show up for me when I'm ready to experience them. I can't say it was a lot of fun last year. I lost my mom. I buried her on Valentine's Day of 2011. My best friend passed away 33 days later. I learned about the abuse in May. I lost my last close relative in July, and I lost another dear friend in August. And a lot of friends left my life, which frequently happens during a year like mine. They don't feel comfortable being around this much death, and who can really blame them? And also some people who are quite dear to me turned out to not be what they presented themselves to be. And again, it's all about the soul journey. It's about learning who you really are, what your values are, what you came here to do. So I wouldn't want to repeat that year again. And as I say, there's really nobody left to bury, so I can't repeat that year again. But having gone through it, I'm certainly a better person than I was before, I would have to say.
Right. With experiences like that, with one, I suppose, shock after another, did you already have a background in understanding or spiritual belief that enabled you to get through that without any real problems?
I had a lot of real problems, but I did indeed have a background. When I was 17 years old, my father died very suddenly, and during the next 16 months, both of my mother's parents also died very suddenly. When you're a teenager, you don't always have peers who understand death, and I had a lot of it all at one time. So I found my way through that period very slowly. I didn't know how to grieve. I didn't know I was allowed to cry. I thought I had to be strong for my mom. That was a mistake. That delayed my grieving and my healing process for many decades, and I now see if I'd been more real about the sadness I felt, she and I could have gotten closer a lot earlier than we actually did. We developed a great relationship when she had dementia. So that's how we got close. I was her caregiver. But for anybody going through a year like I had when I was a teen or a year like I just had, I would say the best thing you can do for yourself is reach out for assistance, admit that you're not feeling well, tell people how much you need their love and support, and above all, call on your spiritual guidance to get you through. Whatever you talk to, higher self, creator, God, whoever you talk to, they're going to get you through it.
Right. So now you've mentioned that you brought together a variety of experts in the healing arts to help us all move through difficult times. Did you mean by that that these were your radio guests?
Some of them were. I ended up doing a series in September of this year called Our Turning Points, Teleseminar Series. And the reason I chose to do this, I had taken a break from my regular radio show. This didn't feel like the time to do radio. You need to have a really wonderful energy to do radio. People want to be attracted to your energy. They actually tune in many times for the energy, and I wasn't running great energy. So it felt important for me to do shows while I wasn't at my best, to have guests on who would help everybody, me especially, but anybody listening as well, who could help them go through their turning points. And we had wonderful, wonderful guests. I got great healing, and I got wonderful feedback from the listeners as well.
Hmm. I notice you specifically mention one of your guests, Dr. Dean Schrock, the author of Why Love Heals. Now, that presumably is something you obviously have a strong belief in. Where does that figure in your dealings with other people? I mean, what do you tell them so that they can use that to their benefit or for other people's benefit?
First of all, Mike, I love your questions. You're asking really fabulous questions. I enjoy coming up with answers, so thank you for challenging me. And Dean, by the way, and I went to the same high school, believe it or not. Isn't that an interesting coincidence? We found this out later on. I believe that love heals, especially with the year like I just had. I lost my last relatives. I lost my best friends. And I know nobody ever dies. I'm a medium. I know how to talk to those on the other side. And they never do die. And I'm in more touch with them now than I was when they were here, if that makes any sense. But having said that, we do miss having their love on the physical. We do miss seeing their emails in our inbox. We miss hearing their voices on our telephone. And I believe that love is the great healer. So for a year like I just had, where so many people left my life either through death or through choice, I found myself really being interested in opening my heart as much as possible, being transparent, being vulnerable, being as real as I possibly could. And as a result, I've attracted the most beautiful loving friendships or transformed the friendships I had left. I'm so blessed to have been able to do this. Many of us choose to put on these facades that, oh, we're fine, everything's great, and we're really not. And when we admit that we're not fine, that we're working to be fine, but we're not quite there, that allows other people to be there in service. I think people really love to help, and I gave people the chance to help. And because I did, my life is in a much better space now than it was a year ago.
Right. Now, I think you actually mentioned then that you can talk with spirit. Do you use that as a means of unfolding, if you like, the problems that people might come to you with?
Yeah, I really enjoy being, I call the telephone or the tube. I call myself a professional tube. I like to connect people with spirit, and the more work I do to clean myself out, the better a tube I can be to help others. So I find that when those on the other side are willing to speak with us, and generally they are, if the need of the person on this side is strong enough, if the love of the person on the other side is strong enough, they will come through. And it's a wonderful service. I'm really blessed to be able to do this with people.
Right. It's one thing for someone with your abilities to be able to help people in that connection, but do you think that everybody can make that contact? Because perhaps sometimes they hear voices in their head and they might not be sure whether it's their own sort of imagination or their own ideas that they could put down to one of their loved ones coming through. I mean, how would you help someone to do it?
I love teaching people how to connect. I don't like people becoming dependent upon me when they can make their own connection. So I'm glad you're making this point. I believe we all have the ability that we can develop. I was not a natural medium. I went to a school to learn how to be a medium. I went to Delphi University in Georgia, and I went for a week in a class called in-depth channeling. And I went there because my homeopath lied to me. He told me I was going to learn my illness patterns, and I learned nothing about that, but I learned how to be a medium. So if I can learn how to do this at age 45, anybody can learn. And the best way I have of teaching people is to say, pay attention to those voices in your head. And if you feel the resonance in your heart, if you feel a vibration, you feel an opening, if you feel a warmth, if you feel an inclusiveness, if you feel a healing, any sort of a strong emotional reaction, to me that means you're very connected. And at that point I advise people just to be. Do deep breathing. Be in nature. Find a way to be extremely peaceful and allow things to come in without judging them, without expecting anything, just to be present to what's being given. And that's the key to opening this as far as I'm concerned.
Yes. I would imagine quite a few people would be rather frightened to get involved in that type of thing. Have you got any way of reassuring them that it's quite safe to do so?
Well, every day when I'm doing my daily intentions, I always ask Archangel Michael to come in, and I ask him to protect me in every possible way. So I know Archangel Michael is taking care of me. That helps right there. The other thing is that when I started doing this work, it just felt so outlandish that I could do this work. I never really thought to have fear. It never occurred to me to have fear. I know now it's a good idea to have protection. I don't do it without it. But it was like a game. It was like, wow, I can really do this, and people are getting stuff out of it that they say is correct. This is so cool. So if we go in with the attitude of adventure to say, let's see what I can bring through to help somebody else, or let's see what I can bring through to help myself as I'm working through a situation, to me, the fear goes away.
Right. I can agree with you there as far as your own protection. Now, you talk about soul purpose, ID. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, this came through for me when I was doing a fast. I find that a lot of great spiritual information comes to me while I'm devoting a day to spirit. And I was fasting this past fall, and all of a sudden, I was downloaded with this information. I'm certified in spiritual psychology by the Lightwork Organization. And the spiritual psychology work presents us, this is Steve Rother's work, with the 12 primary life lessons that we come here to master. And we master between 8 and 10 over a series of lifetimes. And then we can go home and we can play on the clouds and eat the ambrosia and nectar and have fun and do all that good stuff. This is not like that. This is a series of 25 different lessons that we come here to master. And we can do it in one lifetime if we really want to, especially the way the energies are now. It's very possible. There are 25 possible lessons that we come in to master. The first 10 are about evolving the self. The second 10 are about evolving the self and then sharing it with others. And the last 5 are about evolving the self through relationship. And once we master our soul purpose ID, we can then stop to attract all the people who come into our lives to push our buttons and to bust us so we can say, why are you hurting me? You finally get, oh, now I get it. Thank you so much. And then we can do other stuff.
Right. Where did you get the idea from that there are 25 different lessons? Was that something that you found out yourself, or was it given to you?
It was given to me.
Right. So this is, what, one of your guides, you mean, or?
You know, I don't know who gave it to me. I really would like to be able to say I got it from this angel or that guide, and I really can't say that. All I knew when it was coming through my body, I could feel my body vibrating to it, and it felt extremely accurate. And I started testing people. I started thinking of everybody I know. And I asked for permission to hire self to test this, and I do a dowsing program to make sure I'm bringing through the right information. And everybody I've tested, I have told them what I've come up with, and I said, does this resonate with you? And they said, my God, I finally get it. Thank you so much for explaining this to me.
Mm. So what do you think are the most important lessons that someone can learn where self is concerned?
Well, I think a lot of it is about finding a way to balance evolving the self with being in relationship with others in a way that's compassionate and inclusive and reciprocal. Many times people tend to be very self-involved. It's all about me. And that's great. Sometimes we need to go there. On the other hand, it doesn't help us to get along with others in the world. We have to know that other people have needs as well as we do. One of my favorite sayings is, my right to extend my arms ends at your nose. I don't want to hit you in the nose by doing something that may hurt you. So can we evolve the self while being in conscious connection with others? That's the thing that's interesting.
Hmm. Right, so do you, when you help people in this way, progress from self, others, and then to relationships? I mean, is it sort of like a set course?
Not at all. And they only get one per lifetime from what I'm being given. And I'm not saying I have the truth. It's everybody's truth. This is one little flavor of the truth. If it resonates, that's great. If it doesn't, that's also great. I'm fine with that. I find that many, many people come in with the soul purpose ID lesson of number one. And I wasn't given names for the lessons. I was given numbers because I think it takes the energetic charge off when you hear, well, you're doing lesson number 7. It's a lot more easy to handle than hearing, well, you're doing the lesson that's about this or that. Many people I have met, especially those who are not consciously on a spiritual path, are working lesson one. And lesson one is about evolving the self. And again, this is about evolving the self, learning who you are from the perspective of how can I do this in relation to others. I find that many old souls work lesson number one in this lifetime because maybe they gave too much of themselves away in previous lifetimes, or maybe they didn't really evolve themselves deeply enough in previous lifetimes. So if you're working lesson one, it doesn't mean you're less evolved than if you're working 25, but it means that that's what you came here to work with this time. And I have found many people who are working lesson one who are brilliant healers and brilliant spiritual teachers. So it's not that one is worse. One is as good as 25, if good or bad really matter.
Right, I would guess that the most frequently asked question that you get is really about the purpose of life, and I'm assuming that who you are obviously has some great bearing on what that is. Would you like to comment upon that?
Sure. Yeah, why are we here? I don't really know. I know why. I think I know why I'm here, and that probably will change next week. I think it keeps evolving as I evolve. But for me, I am here to be in service. And my soul purpose ID underscores that. I really believe I'm here to be in service. Why are you here, Mike? What did you come here to do?
Same thing.
Cool. And your soul purpose ID is different than mine. Would you like to hear what yours is about?
Yes.
Okay. I'm a number 17. And I'll tell you about mine, and I'll tell you about yours. I'm a 17. It takes the energy of the 7 plus the energy of the 1. The 1 before the 7 is the energy of the teacher, or the one who shares with others. So first we have to learn how to do it, and then we can share it with others. So for me, I've come here to learn how to balance the spiritual life with the physical life, which, again, I didn't become out-and-out spiritual, as far as I knew, until I got into my mid-40s. Once I finally got the hang of that, I can then get into teaching others or explaining to others or sharing with others what my journey has been. You've come here to channel. This doesn't come as a surprise to you, I'm sure. So when you were a child, were you encouraged by your family to have your connection to spirit, or did they discourage you?
Not at all, no. My parents were sort of non-church types or religious in any way at all, so there was no encouragement or nothing to put me off, I suppose, if I had of done something like that. No, not at all.
Okay, so when you were a child and you started getting information, did you get information when you were a child, or when did it open up for you?
I probably had ideas and felt curious about it, but because of that situation, I couldn't get any answers. But like young people were in my young days, you were bundled off to Sunday school regularly, so my understanding probably initially came through those lessons, but I was never quite happy with the orthodox views, so I didn't really progress or develop that side till quite a long time later. I'm guessing probably I must have been sort of in my 30s. So it took a long time before it really opened up and then progressed.
And then when you started opening it up, and I'm hoping other people benefit from your sharing your story here, as you opened up, did you trust what you were getting? Did you think you were making it up in your head? How did you know that you were getting good information?
Well, I can tell you the first time I ever had an experience of something coming through was in, must have been about 1970 or something like that. There was a new spiritual group that had appeared on the scene, which I met some of the people of at an exhibition that my own society had a stand at, and I was very interested in their views and opinions, so I went up to stay with them for a weekend. But when I saw how they conducted themselves, I was very put off and I found it very negative. And after a long journey back home, probably didn't arrive back home till 2-3 o'clock in the morning, And you would imagine you were so dead tired, you'd probably sleep for about 8 or 9 hours. I was woken up about 6 o'clock in the morning, feeling absolutely fresh and re-energized. And I knew that I had to take a message. I always kept a notepad and a pencil in my by the side of the bed, because I fancied at one time that if I had some very vivid dreams, I would write them down before I forgot them. But I never did actually get round to that. But anyway, I took this message, and it was about the group I visited, and it signed itself off as "I am that I am." Now, it was probably another 20, 30 years or much more before I ever did anything like that again. So I guess that one experience proved that something could happen, but I had no inclination or urge to develop it.
Okay. And when that started for you, how long did it take you before you began sharing your messages with others?
Well, I didn't initially, during that period, get messages. I mean, I might have been intuitively fed with information that I gave out, because what happened was that with the society that I joined, I used to give talks. Then eventually I ran my own branch, and I still gave talks. And nothing happened on the channeling side till about, must have been 2004. So that was a long time, well, quite late in my life in that sense. Because I'd just retired from work, so around that time I was about sort of 66. So I was late using it, but I think that's how it was planned.
It's never too late. You know, it showed up when it showed up. It showed up for me a little bit earlier than you, and some children have it when they come out of the womb. It's quite amazing seeing different people's paths.
I was asked to do it, and I've been doing it ever since, and it is circulated wide and far, and it's strange the way it's worked out, but I quite enjoy it.
I love your work. I think you do amazing work, and you're a very clear channel. You know, I wanted to ask, I hope it's okay that I hijacked your show for a moment, because I wanted to hear your story, and I wanted to see how it fits with this whole purpose ID.
You
know, none of us really wake, you know, on career day in school, when the teacher says, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" Very few of us say, "I want to be a channel." It doesn't really work that way. So later on in life, we develop these skills. It's like, whoa, I had no idea. It's very interesting, isn't it, to get this later in life?
That's right. Well, I've always had a feeling that if somebody said I could do something, wanted me to do it, I would always have faith in their faith in me, and I would try it. So this is really what happened. Somebody said, "Oh, we, you know, we want you to do this." So fine, I sort of put it to the test.
Yeah.
And eventually got something going. So I thought that was good. But in the years preceding that, I think, as it might be with a lot of people, when I look back, it really was setting the background, I think, for everything I did in the latter stages. Because I was interested in spiritual matters, UFOs, Atlantis, and a whole conglomeration of different interesting subjects. And I think it all helped give me the ideal background.
Bless you. It all turned out the way it was supposed to turn out, apparently.
Yes. There you are. So did you enjoy speaking to me?
Very much. You can have your show back. Now I'll shut up and be a good guest.
Right. Well, anyway, did that fit in with what you sort of thought?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's fine. Okay.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you shared your story. Thank you so much for doing that.
Yeah. So is that, in fact, how you approach most of the people that want to do some serious work with you? Do you sort of investigate their background and find out how they've arrived at the point they're in? And is that important?
Yeah, and I think you'll agree with this. I'm a radio host, as are you.
Yes.
And a good radio host becomes very good at asking questions. And the questions are a very important part of the healing process. So I'm glad I've been hosting radio, because it helps me get right to the point with people. What's your story? Where have you been? Where do you want to go? what's going on with you? And you find that you're given questions if you're working with somebody, by whoever is working with you, their guides, whatever. And I love learning about people. To me, it's never ending, and it's always fascinating seeing people's life stories.
Right, right. Now, when you have people who want to know who they are, or perhaps you want to tell them who they are, what do they do with that information when they get it? I mean, what is the object of it?
Well, you know, I have a different object than they might have. They might take it as entertainment. They might take it as a clue for what their next step needs to be. They might take it as, oh, this is ridiculous. This has nothing to do with me. This was a waste of time and money. You know, everybody has their own reaction. What I would hope that they would do is hear me out, ask me any questions that feel appropriate, and then test with their own discernment whether this feels like something that's useful for them, if they want to keep investigating this, working with me or not, looking at it on their own or not, to see if this will help them on their path. My sincere desire is to be of service to people, and if I can help them by helping them discover their full purpose ID, then bring it on.
So do you think that everybody has, whether they know it or not, a spiritual objective in life, and that they are, or it is all part of their spiritual evolution?
You know, it's interesting you bring this question up right now. I used to write for the Alzheimer's Reading Room blog. My mom and my aunt both had dementia. And I was the person writing for the blog who covered the spiritual aspects. I used to write under the heading of Keeping the Love Alive. And I would talk about some of the beautiful loving experiences I had with my mom or with my aunt, even when they were in the later stages of dementia. So yesterday, the man who started the blog, Bob DeMarco, posted an article about how a lot of people are criticizing him for his point of view, because he looks at caregiving as a spiritual experience. So the one person was quoted in the article as saying, this is not a spiritual experience, you're making this a religion, and there's nothing good about this, I'm a selfish person, I don't want to have to do this, maybe I should start a blog for selfish caregivers. And I read that because I had posted something about this is a path of service. And about it's been a great way for me to learn practical principles for living spiritually-based lives. So I wrote back and I said, I don't see anything romantic about Alzheimer's or dementia. I've been through it with my mom. My mom was alternately loving and violent. My aunt had almost no short-term memory. Having said that, I'm really glad I went through the experience because I believe every experience in life has a gift for us. And if we but look at the gift, we can grow and become better people. I'm a much better person, I think, because I did this with my mom and my aunt. And I said, I honor your point of view. I realize you're in a different space than I am, and I wish you all the best. And he wrote me back, and he said something to the effect that, you know, whatever you're saying, that's not true for all of us. So my hope for him is at some point perhaps he will entertain the notion that there is a higher reason for everything that we do. I believe, yeah, everything in life is aimed to get us to a higher place spiritually if we only embrace that and allow it to be.
Right. Do you believe that this progress is an ongoing thing simply because we have had many lives before and we will continue to do so?
Yep. Whether we remember them consciously or not, our cellular memory does, our DNA does, and sometimes as we go along, we start to get memories of what happened before. I've had that, I'm certain you have as well, and that's the adventure. That's when it gets to be really fun. We're just continuing on.
Right. Do you mean that you've had flashbacks to previous lives?
Yeah, I have.
Anything interesting?
None of this stuff is boring, is it? it's really fun to talk about this stuff. I remember I was in Atlantis. Apparently they had a rose quartz temple, and I was in charge of the rose quartz temple. People would come to me, and I'd place them on a rose quartz table, and we would do healing work with them in that place. It was quite phenomenal. I also, in this lifetime, do natural health work, and I've been an herbalist in past lives. I've had some of that information come through. I would actually ask myself in that lifetime to influence me in this lifetime. When I have someone coming to me and I don't know what to do with them, say, please bring me the information I used to have so I can help this person now. And again, that's where it gets to be fun, because we have no time, unless we think we do. Everything's happening simultaneously, so why can't I talk to this person I used to be?
Indeed, yes. Well, it's actually very interesting because I think in the last maybe few years, the knowledge and perhaps the use of crystals has suddenly become more widespread and more known.
Yeah, I mean, you're even seeing children named Crystal now more than you ever did before. I had a waitress today, her name was Crystal, and I just smiled to myself saying, yep, I had a feeling. You know, and the stones have such a beautiful service to give to us. They balance us. They help us get clear. They give us so many beautiful qualities. I'm so glad to see many people, especially the children, the crystal children, the new children, are resonating with the stones and speak with them and communicate with them. It's wonderful to see this opening up.
Do I remember correctly, is the rose quartz a love energy?
Yes.
So
here we go
when
back to talking about love, yeah.
Yeah, so when you're in the rose quartz temple, presumably, then you used to do healing with the crystals.
Yeah, they would lay, the clients would be on a rose quartz table. It was an enormous table, kind of like a pool table, I guess, is the best way I can describe it, with a pedestal and a very large slab of rose quartz. It was all rose quartz, even the pedestal was. And I remember they had skylights in the roof of the temple. And when the sunlight would hit the table at just the right time, people would feel the energy, and they would be able to very gently release the blocks that were holding them back from loving themselves and loving others.
That's very interesting. So would you recommend that people have rose quartz crystal with them, or perhaps wear it like a pendant?
You know, if it resonates, sure, absolutely. I think the stones choose us, we don't choose them. I would suggest that people go either to dig crystals. I've dug quartz crystals in Arkansas, and that's an amazing experience. So either dig your own crystals, go to a place that sells stones, and see, okay, who wants to come home with me today? And they'll have something interesting to tell you.
Right. Do I remember correctly that it wasn't too long ago that they discovered these gigantic crystal caves below Arkansas? Is that correct?
Yeah. And if you ever get to, have you been to Arkansas, Mike? Have you ever done that?
No, I haven't. No.
The energy is amazing there. I've been there several times. Arkansas is built on a bed of clear quartz, and some areas have a stronger vibration than others. I earlier referred to when I was raped and held captive. That happened in Arkansas, and I think that was completely appropriate that it happened in Arkansas. The energy was very strong there. And because I was traumatized by what had happened, and because the energy of the crystal in the ground was so strong, it literally forced me to leave my old life behind, to become a spiritual person and to do spiritual work. I don't think I would have had the same results if this had happened to me anywhere else in the world, but because it was Arkansas, that's where it needed to be. There are parts of Arkansas, Hot Springs, Eureka Springs, that are amazingly active. I remember driving down a highway, Route 270, to Mount Ida, Arkansas, which is a place a lot of people find crystals, and you could actually hear the humming underneath the highway. You could hear the humming. Mm-hmm. You could feel it. It was almost like you were stoned. It was that kind of an energy. And my dog looked like she was actually stoned as well. We're there together, and I'm thinking, how do I sober up my dog from the crystal energy?
That's interesting.
Yes.
I mean, I've seen videos of the crystals in the caves, and they're the most enormous ones I've ever seen. They're gigantic.
Yes, they are. They are. It's an amazing place to be, and they're here to help us, and they're activating now. You know, as we're getting these sunstorms we're experiencing now, and as we're going more into the ascension energy, the crystals are waking up, and the crystals want to help us. And if we allow their energy into us, there's no limit to what we can accomplish.
Yes, I totally agree with you. In fact, I've read information in very recent times to that effect, that they are being activated again. And they link in with other sites all around the world. So what do you think the outcome of this year will be? Because you must clearly have heard of the 21st of December this year as being a very high point in the upliftment in our consciousness levels. What is your view about it?
You know, a lot of people are running around doing the Chicken Little thing, the sky is falling, the sky is falling. I don't believe that. I believe that we're going to go through some difficult times, and then we're going to enter into what I call the golden age of enlightenment. that we need to get rid of a lot of this denseness that's been holding us back. It's not going to necessarily be pretty to go through the process of getting rid of the denseness, but once we do, we can then move into creating a society that's so much better than what we've got right now. And that's truly what I believe.
Right. So your type of work is clearly then very important for these coming months, because people, I suppose, really do need to know who they are so that they can start preparing for what they visualize might be coming. People obviously have different ideas, and some people believe it's going to be like the apocalypse, but I don't see that at all, quite frankly. But as you said, there are going to be changes. There will be some problems, without a doubt, as the Earth puts itself right. But what do you think will actually happen on that day then? Because it seems to be thought of by many as a day when there will be a very high energy alignment with the central sun.
You know, I don't have guidance on that yet. I don't think I'm supposed to know. I have read something recently which may or may not be accurate, and we won't know until December 21 if it is. But they talked about there's going to be 3 days of total darkness at that time, that we'll have no electricity, we'll have none of the modern conveniences available, and the world will stop for 3 days. And then it will hit a reset and go on at that point. So they're suggesting we have provisions, we have water, we have canned food, we have whatever we need to stay alive.
Yeah.
That feels as right as anything else does to me, but I'm not being given any clear guidance on what will happen, so we'll all find out together, won't we?
Oh, absolutely, yes. And I respect other people's beliefs, because they've arrived at them a different way, maybe, to what I've arrived at mine. But I have to say that I don't at the moment find I resonate with the idea of 2 to 3 days of darkness. And so that one's really on the back burner, as they say. I'm waiting to hear a little bit more about that.
What do you think is going to happen December 21st? Do you have any guidance on that yet?
Well, in general terms, I think that the alignment will bring such powerful energies to the Earth that it will be one step in the ascension process. I mean, the people or the spirit or the space people speak of ascension in that sense. But, of course, it's not the be-all and end-all of the ascension process, but it's a very big step on the path. And I think as a result, because of the high vibrations, if there are still souls on the Earth at that time that can't meet that or aren't at that level, I think then they will be moved on or find themselves in a different situation. So it really is the parting of the ways, in the sense that if you can't match those vibrations, then you can't go with them, obviously, because of the law of attraction.
And I see a lot of people choosing to transition at this time. As the energy raises up on the planet, they can't physically handle being here anymore. Has that been your experience as well?
Yes, I think so, yes.
Oh.
Yes, indeed. Yes. Yeah, no, I don't know. I can say a lot more about that one. We all have to, I think, follow our own intuition. That's the most important thing of all, I think. But the truth we believe in today might alter tomorrow because of something else that comes our way. So I don't think we can really reject anybody else's beliefs, and I certainly wouldn't do that. But in the long run, there can only be the one truth, and I think everybody will one day reach that point. And, of course, you mentioned a little bit earlier a very important thing that I think is relevant, is that we are all one anyway. So we're all really heading in the same direction.
Whether we realize it or not, yes, we are. And we cannot do this alone anymore. We have to do this in community. It's just not going to work to be self-involved. We have to reach out for help. We've got to help others. And we've got to do a we consciousness thing. It's time that happens.
Indeed, yes, I agree with you that. Now, you did mention a little earlier about the higher self. What do you believe the higher self to be?
Boy, that's a great question. You know, my idea about higher self is for me, it's, and this may not be anybody else's truth, this is my own interpretation, take it or leave it, The higher self is me at the perfected level, the part that I'm not able to do right now in this moment in my humanness, but the part that connects me with the divine, the all there is. And I speak with my higher self frequently, because when I don't have a clue, higher self generally will.
Mm.
How do you define higher self? Can I ask you your definition of it?
Sorry, repeat that.
Can I ask your definition of higher self?
Oh, yeah. I think it's our God aspect.
Yeah.
I think the higher self is a part of that energy that we know as God. I think that's it, full stop, really. But it is a part of us that we are evolving towards rejoining again. I think that's part of what we're learning to reach by raising our levels of consciousness.
Yeah, I'm really glad you used the word God, because I also believe that there is God. And many people on this path will use other words. I like God. It works for me. So I'm glad to hear you say the word as well.
Oh, yes. Well, it doesn't matter, I think, what people believe God is, in essence. I believe God is what we call God, is a very high energy that encompasses or encloses everything that is. Everything is part of God in that sense.
Yeah.
But some people might prefer to think of God as something like a very high-level angel. But I don't think it matters, really. As long as you believe there is a higher intelligence that somehow has created or guides life forms, I think that's all you need to know at that point.
Beautifully said. Thank you for sharing. I appreciate your answering my question.
Well, you see, none of us really can say that we know too much about that aspect, because with a finite mind, it's probably beyond our concept to fully understand it. But I think it's sufficient if we know that everything owes its life to this God force. Anyway, how do you connect when you want to speak to your higher self? Do you go into a sort of a form of meditation or something like that?
At this point, and I'm sure you understand this, my life is a meditation. It's very difficult for me to not be in that state. So all right. I have to do is just say, yo, or I need some help here, and it shows up pretty quickly if I'm clear. If I'm in my humanness and I'm stressed about something, or if I'm dealing with something that doesn't feel real good, I have to take some deep breaths. I need to center and balance myself, and then I can go and I can usually get what I need.
Yeah, it's wonderful. I think all I do if I want to reach that point is just really to quieten myself down and try and clear my mind of the rubbish that might be in it. And then I think you create the link for it.
Yes.
Now, look, I've mentioned your book, Nine Roses for Chelsea, and Chelsea is your soulmate dog.
Yes.
So let's hear a bit about that before the program comes to an end.
Okay, well, I was adopted by my first dog at age 40, never liked dogs growing up. One came into my life. She was an assisted rescue. She was a retired champion Norwegian Elkhound named Chelsea. She was 4 years old. And my then-husband and I were in the market for a dog, and she showed up, and she came here to kick me into being who I really needed to be. She taught me how to love myself, how to love others. She taught me to take my personal power, and I learned how to communicate with her, or rather, she was able to communicate with me, because she was definitely the higher being than I was. I didn't know a lot of things. I thought I was getting a dog. That's how uneducated I was. I was actually acquiring a spiritual master who came here to teach me about how many levels of service there are. I learned what animals are here to help us with, that they have a spiritual purpose as well as we do. I learned that they're usually much smarter than we are, and we need to get over ourselves thinking that we are the supreme beings, because not so much. Chelsea passed away in 2003. Something had happened to me, and I was traumatized, and she took on all my pain, all my trauma, and died a very difficult death from kidney failure. While she was going through the death process, we became extremely bonded. I actually went as far as I could to the other side without actually crossing over with her. I wanted to cross. They wouldn't let me. It wasn't my time. But she promised me we'd always be in touch with each other, and she's given me a lot of guidance about how to grieve people, how to move forward, what dogs have come here to teach us. She's an amazing, amazing spiritual partner. Even today, we talk very frequently, And people see her around me. If I meet young children or other dogs, they oftentimes get scared because they see this dog and spirit around me and they want to know, what is she doing here?
So from the time you had that dog, could you always communicate with her?
I was a really slow student. She could communicate with me, but I had to learn how to do it back. And the longer we were together, she was a very patient teacher. I was not the best student at this. But she says, okay, I'm going to do this until you get it. And I did learn. And the irony is my present dog is sitting here with me right now. I can't communicate with her the way I could with Chelsea. And every animal has different things that will allow you to do. I love her. She loves me. We're companion soulmates, of course. But I don't have that level of, I knew Chelsea like the back of my hand. I don't have that with the present dog. And I think it's good because that way I don't get into ego about, look how great I am. I get into, okay, different relationship, different things to learn and experience here.
Do you think that being an animal, I mean, of that species, that although they are clearly intelligent, do you think there is a limitation to what they can do in the sense that they don't need to know mathematics or algebra or geography and things like that? They're very good at their own thing.
Yeah, I don't see limitation with them. The longer I live with animals and hear stories from other people, the more I'm amazed. But, you know, the story people talk about was the tsunami. And the animals all knew something was going to happen, and they vanished. The people didn't, but the animals were gone. They know things we don't know.
Yes, I'm sure you're quite correct about that, because I think as man has over hundreds of years learned a lot through observation, I think they discovered that fact quite a long time ago. And no doubt they also left, even if they didn't know why, and that was very valuable. Do you think that animals have an understanding of spirit or spiritual levels?
I have seen so many animals look for spirits. I've seen when my mother was in the process of transitioning before she actually went, I would see my present dog looking up over my bed. She would see spirits. And one of my friends had a beautiful story about she was taking care of her aunt who was dying from pancreatic cancer. And her own soulmate dog was her aunt's faithful companion. She was always with the aunt as she went through the final stages of the illness. And just when the aunt was about to die, the animal was in the room with the aunt, and then she saw the animal's head turn away from the aunt to the upper corner of one of the walls, where the wall met the ceiling, and stared at that, and then left the room. And the aunt died about a half an hour later. He actually saw the spirit leave the body.
Yes, I think certainly animals have some very developed sixth sense. No doubt you've read many things similar to that. One that I read recently was a lady whose dog knew when she was going to have an epileptic fit, and it was able to communicate it to her so that she could prepare for it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think things like that, I mean, are obviously wonderful, aren't they?
They have a lot of service dogs like that. One time I was kind of embarrassed. I had a lump in my breast. And I went to somebody's house, and their dog knew I had a lump in my breast. And I didn't want that person to know that I had a lump in my breast. The dog went right to it. I'm like, okay, busted. What can I say? No pun intended.
It's funny you should mention that particular problem, because I also read very, very recently of an animal that used to lay on this lady's breast. And she sort of rather got the message that something might not be quite right. And sure enough, she had a lump there.
Yep.
So, yes, they're wonderful things. I mean, when you think of guide dogs as well, I'm never so amazed at how they function. I know they're trained, but nevertheless, they're wonderful animals.
It's amazing. You know, we could talk about this for 3 days and we would never get
absolutely
to the bottom of it.
Absolutely, yes.
It's a miracle. Well, the whole thing is a miracle. And the fact we can live with them in our homes, we're allowed to interact with them and learn from them and care for them, what a blessing.
Yes. And, of course, it's very similar, I guess, with another intelligent animal that we call the horse.
Yes, very much.
Yeah, so they're lovely things.
Right.
We haven't quite come to the end of the program, but I do have to keep a minute or so back to myself to announce next week's guest. Is there anything you would like to add, something we might not have covered, or have you got a message that you would like to give people?
Thank you for the opportunity to do so. Yeah, for anybody listening...
Can I just stop you a second?
Sure.
Also, please give out your website address or any other information for people who want to follow it through.
Thank you for that. If anybody wants to contact me, I'm currently revamping my website, but you can find me at info@aligningwithyourdestiny.com. info@aligningwithyourdestiny.com. Thank you for having me here. It's been a true delight to be here. But the last thing I would just say to everybody is to follow those nudges from spirit that show up, overheard conversations, the feelings you have to do things that don't make any sense, the things people tell you that say, maybe I can do that after all. Don't limit yourself by what you've been. Allow yourself to blossom into who you could be.
Yes, I think that's wonderful. Now, you haven't mentioned your email address. Do you like to,
info@aligningwithyourdestiny.com is my email address. And
right,
websites
okay.
Right now, I have a few websites I'm revamping. I'm going to go back to Glow with the Flow for my Healing Arts website. That was my radio website. I'm going to go back
right.
to that.
So okay.
We're going to be revamping that. So Aligning with Your Destiny doesn't have much going on right now, but Glow with the Flow does, and it will have more. So please come by, and I hope to hear from you. It's been really wonderful connecting with all of you energetically today. And, Michael, you're an awesome interviewer. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for coming on. It's been a very interesting talk with you, and I've enjoyed it. And when you're having fun, the time goes so quickly.
I can't believe it's an hour.
Well, it's not really. It's about 55 minutes, but nevertheless, we won't make a scene about another 5 minutes. Yes, thank you very much. It's been very enjoyable to speak with you.
Thank you.
That was my guest, Cheryl Hirsch Kramer. And next week, friends, I've got Susan Taylor Shear coming on. She's written a book called Soul Reunion, The Return Home from Separation. And she says there is a path to get there. What she wants to do is build on the foundation of two earlier life-changing books, which are about soul mastery and soul radiance. So we want to talk about all of those. So thank you for being with me today, and I do hope you can make it next week. God bless you all. Thank you.